when you look at vendors, hey, I'm trusting you to do the work. I'm sending you money. Whether or not you ask them to send pictures, I would definitely advise that if you're not local, hey, send me some pictures of your work. Make sure I can check off on them before you send them a check. So there's good checks and balances that you can work. It is a constant struggle.
Welcome back to another episode. I am your host, Spencer Sutton, and I'm excited today because I've got a guest host with me. Now, we usually have Matthew Whitaker, but he is traveling today, and so I brought on Will Morton, and Will works with us at Evernest, and Will is the Director of Property Services for Evernest, which is a fancy way of saying he runs all of our maintenance. Like, he is director over all the maintenance for the entire company, all 4,500 properties. So Will, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're excited. And the reason I brought Will on and asked him to co-host this with me is because I want to talk about three mistakes that we see rental property investors make when it comes to maintenance. So who better to bring into this than Will, who runs all of our maintenance? And just to give you an idea of the scope of our maintenance, Will, now I mentioned 4,500 properties. I mean, do you have any idea like how much maintenance goes on at Evernest? I mean, we're talking millions of dollars worth of maintenance across all markets and just thousands of work orders.
Yeah, I want to say in 2020, we were over 20,000 work orders across the markets. And obviously, we've expanded since that time with the amount of properties that we manage. So a lot of things coming in and out.
Yeah. And then even managing all of that during COVID last year in 2020, which presented its own unique challenges. And then not only that, but we also have a lot of investors who handle their own maintenance, right? So we see both sides of it. And usually we're still involved as a property manager when maintenance is handled by the owner. Typically, we'll get those work orders and pass them on to the owner. But so we see both sides of it, right? So we see a property manager handling maintenance and we see an owner handling their own maintenance. So what we want to talk about today are we want to talk about three mistakes that we see, three problems that investors make handling their own rental maintenance. This is completely meant to, hey, help you think through these things. And if you're handling in whatever city you're managing rental property in, then maybe this will give you some good ideas to help. All right, so let's kick it off. You know, this is the first one that I thought of was the first struggle and the first mistake, I think, is investors finding good contractors. So talk a little bit about finding really good, reliable contractors. What's the difficulty here?
Yeah, it's something that we struggle with here a pretty good bit, I would say. You know, when we open up new markets or going out there trying to source and finding vendors is a pretty big challenge, right? So, you know, a lot of things that I'm looking at or looking for vendors, you know, probably starting point, most people are going to jump on the web looking for Google reviews, 5-star reviews. It's a great place to start, right? Like, hey, you go find John's Plumbing or whoever else that you want to use. See Google ratings. It's a good place to start. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean they're the best out there, but it is a good place for you to start. There's other websites out there that you could go to that have contractors or vendors listed on there that they could, you know, suggest to you. I think one that comes up like Angie's List and stuff like
Angie's
that.
Angie's List, you got Thumbtack.
So several different avenues that you could go to, but that, I would say that's number one. Hey, find a list and start from there. You know, really what we're looking for or what you should be looking for is your main list of vendors that you need. So HVAC, plumbing, a general person, potentially roofing. So your main kind of vendors that you're looking for. And then looking at, do I just need one, a primary source or a primary vendor, or do I potentially need a backup? I would suggest always having a backup because, you know, if I'm using Spencer to do my plumbing and Spencer's busy and I don't have a backup and I've got a true emergency on my hands, what are you going to do? So not only are you finding your primary vendors, you also need to have at least one backup specifically for your major trades that you're going to be looking for. Because when you do need them, you need them right then.
That is the truth. I mean, that is what I have found. Like when I first bought my rental houses, I bought the very first ones I bought was a 10-house package. And I was not thinking about maintenance, but I'm telling you what, when a house needed it, I was like, uh-oh, where am I going to go find this person? And when I was buying it, it was in a low to moderate income area. And so I had to find somebody, A, who was available, B, who would go and work in low to moderate income parts of town, and then C, who didn't mind working on smaller jobs. Like, some of my jobs were not tremendous. And then what I realized was, like, I needed them all the time. With 10 houses, I mean, I didn't need a full-time person, but I needed them more than I thought. And so I probably did it the wrong way. But I would even say for local investors, you know, going and driving properties. So this is one of the things I started to do, was drive around the neighborhoods that I was buying houses in. And I would stop when I saw work trucks, and I would go in, I would talk to the contractors, I would look at their work, look at what they were doing. So that is one way that you can do it if you're local. Now, doing this out of town is a totally different game. It's a totally different beast, because, and I've known investors who've tried to manage maintenance from afar, and it usually doesn't work very well, in my opinion, because they typically can't see the work. I'm thinking particularly of a time where we actually took over management of a property, and all of this work was said to be done to this house. And we had to literally go out and take pictures and say, none of this work has been done at your house. I know you paid them $10,000 or however much to rehab this property, but zero work has been done. And here is the proof. Like, literally, we were just at the house. Now, that's an extreme case, but we do see that happen. But I think managing it from afar is pretty difficult. I mean, wouldn't you say, yeah. Will?
Yeah, I do. A lot of it is trust, right? Like, you know, building trust with a vendor, building trust with a property manager, if that's the way that you want to go. I mean, that's really what you're looking for here. And I think, Spencer, you bring up a good point too. Hey, the bigger, or, you know, the broader your portfolio, the more focused your vendors are going to be on you. So if you have 10, 20, 30 or whatever homes, those vendors, you're going to have more work orders inherently just because of the volume that you have. They're going to give you more priority, as opposed to if you're a single family or single home owner, or maybe two, you may only be generating one or two work orders every now and then. Well, you go down on the priority list.
Right.
And again, that's why I was talking about making sure you have multiple ones, because if you're not giving them work, they do have to continuously stay busy to keep their business operating. So if you're not providing them steady work, they're going to find somebody else. They will do your work, but you're going to get an order and maybe lower priority than what you may be looking for. So just things to think about. Hey, if I have a smaller portfolio, I may need more vendors because I know I'm going to be lower on their priority list, as opposed to the bigger your portfolio is, you're going to give them more work and they'll bump you up. So it's a relationship thing. Spencer brought up other good points about trusting their work. Obviously, the more work you're giving them, you're going to see how they're reacting, their response time, the quality of work, their billing cycles, all of that type stuff. So super important. Hey, somebody could tell you they're five stars or the best vendor all they want to, until you see it and interact with them, you truly just don't know. So
Yeah, this is one of the reasons we started our own maintenance department at Evernest. Was we were finding difficulty, like, having vendors, like, pay attention to our stuff all the time. And we wanted them, like, we wanted them on call all the time. So eventually we just said, okay, forget about it. We are going to start our own maintenance company. We're going to hire and pay our own people. And that way we control the cost, but we also control the quality of work. And that, therefore, we can give our owners, our customers, our clients guarantees as to the quality of the work. And if something wasn't done just right, hey, we'll go back out there and fix it. So I think those are really good. And really, to Will's point, if you only have a couple of rental properties, one or two, good, very good contractors, workers are going to stay busy, right? They are going to stay busy because they're good. They do good quality work. And maybe they're priced correctly. And so it's going to be difficult for you to keep their attention very long. And then yeah. I would even say this, even when you do find somebody who's good and you start working with them, I made the assumption that I could keep them forever. And that's not the case either. Like, we're probably not going to keep these people forever.
Yeah. Yeah. If they're good and they're priced right, you're not the only one that's looking for them. So they're going to go find other work. You know, they may adjust their pricing to where it goes outside of where you're trying to fit them at. And you're always paying attention to that. So it is a constant, again, the trust factor is really big when you're looking at vendors. Hey, I'm trusting you to do the work. I'm sending you money. And, you know, whether or not you ask them to send pictures, I would definitely advise that if you're not local. Hey, send me some pictures of your work. Make sure I can check off of them before you send them a check. So there's good checks and balances that you can work there. But it is a constant struggle. Even at our size, or, you know, a bigger size, 700-800 properties, we still struggle to keep vendors with enough work to keep them focused on us. So just because you're big, you're still going to have these challenges. Just a constant kind of back and forth, building that relationship, keeping them busy, and doing what you're saying you're going to do just as much as they do what they said they're going to do.
Yeah, that's right. I remember in Nashville having, you know, when we had 200, 250 properties, you know, it was hard to keep work going, especially on properties that didn't need a ton of work all the time. As we've expanded to over 500, I mean, you still have to make sure that your people are staying busy and customers are being taken care of. So this is a good segue into the next problem, issue, mistake that we see rental investors making when it comes to maintenance. And to me, that is underestimating repair costs. This is something that we see all the time. And, you know, so once you find a good contractor, I believe investors really are looking for the cheapest. A lot of times we are. Like, I remember when I was searching for my first contractor to help me do houses, man, I wanted to find the cheapest person I could find. And what I found over the years of doing this and running this myself was the cheaper the repair person, the cheaper the maintenance, the cheaper the results. And that ended up biting me in the butt. One particular story was that I had a HVAC guy who he worked for Southwest Airlines and he did HVAC work on the side, and that was great. I loved him because he was so cheap. And so I had to put a new AC unit at a property, and I called him and he said, "Hey, yeah, I can do this and here's my price." And I was like, "Man, that is going to be a good deal cheaper than, you know, other quotes that I'd gotten." So I got him to go do it. And it was the first winter. I remember that tenant coming to my office, knocking on the door and bringing her power bill to me and saying, "What is going on at this rental property?" And her power bill was $700 or $800 something. She was like, "What is happening?" Well, he had installed this unit, this whole entire HVAC system, but, and Will, you may understand what happened. Essentially, it was using strip heating to heat the property, which all that does is it drags more energy. Like, it is sucking the energy out of the house and causing your power bill to go up. And since my tenants were responsible for the power bill, they were used to paying, you know, a $200 power bill or whatever. And here they were, $800, and they freaked out. The end of the story was, I had to replace it. I had to spend almost double what I paid him to get it done the right way. And that was a huge learning point for me. So talk about investors underestimating repair costs.
Yeah, I think it's being realistic or understanding the true cost of what's going on. And I wouldn't say being okay with it, but you just need to understand really what you're looking at. You know, kind of to Spencer's point, ran across the same conversation yesterday, I believe. Owners making a decision right now, central AC or central heating and air, or potentially putting in window units. So obviously the cost of a window unit is much lower than the cost of a central HVAC system. But the true cost of that is going to go back to what Spencer is talking about. Are these dual-purpose window units? Window units are not anywhere close to as efficient as an HVAC system. And what is the true cost of it? The tenants are going to bear the burden of it. Do they heat? Do they cool? There's lots of questions at it. So if you're just looking at it as a price standpoint, window units are going to win every time because they're much cheaper. If you're looking at a true cost of it, HVAC system, obviously much more efficient, it's going to last longer, going to provide a better end product to your tenant, which is really what you're looking for, and protect your home or your investment. So, you know, going through those conversations constantly, and I know we've used HVAC systems in both these scenarios, but that's really what you're looking for. So it is a buy job. Hey, do I want to go put some duct tape on it? Or do I want to fix it the correct way? You know, a busted pipe. Do I want to fix one section of it if I have roots in it? Or do I need to take out an old terracotta pipe system, replace the entire line to where I'm not going to continuously go back? So you're looking at the whole thing or the whole job as a picture, and understanding, again, what the true cost of it is over the long term of your investment. So not just with jobs, but also with vendors as well. Spencer talked about it. Do I want to go with the cheapest vendor, and you run the risk of callbacks or things not getting fixed correctly or your tenant not being happy? Or do I want to go more towards a higher quality, which is going to be a higher initial price tag? But do I have a better overall? Am I not going back and fixing things? Or are they fixed right the first time? So when you're looking at this, you know, to me, I always look at it as a headache, right? Like, how big of a headache do I want, or do I want to think about it? Like, if I go buy high quality stuff, my expectation is I buy it, I do it right one time, I don't worry about it again. Or I can take a risk, I'm going to go buy a cheaper version of that, and I know my risk is greater to have to go back and repair or replace at some point in time. So it's really depending on what you want to do.
You know, this really gets back to what I talk to investors about. I had an investor, we were talking on the phone. No, actually, we were at lunch. This was last week. And he was talking about buying a 20-house portfolio. And, you know, I was like, great. He's like, what advice do you have for me? I said, one of the pieces of advice I have for you is don't be undercapitalized. Like, what you're estimating on your spreadsheet you're going to have to spend on maintenance, I would up that, like bump that up. It needs to be almost scary for you, because something's going to go wrong. You know, you buy a 20-house portfolio, you're going to have tenants move out unexpectedly. You're going to have major repairs that need to be done. These things include roof, HVAC, sewer lines, whatever the case is. Like, you need to be prepared. And then for general maintenance, you know, I know that I always struggle when I first started. I struggled with the whole price versus cost thing. I was looking at the cheapest price and I wasn't looking at the long-term cost. And it's that short-term thinking that people get stuck in that ends up biting them in the tail. And it results in a poor experience for your resident, for your tenant. And so a part of the cost that you need to factor in when you're using cheaper prices is the cost that you may lose that tenant before a year earlier or 2 years earlier than you should, because they're not happy with, like in your case, Will. I mean, if a resident's like, here's some of the things that you need to think about in that situation from a cost standpoint. A, it's going to take me longer to rent that property. And it's going to sit on the market longer, more than likely with window units. And then B, how long are you going to keep that resident if there's another house down the road that's renting for the same thing with central heat and air? A tenant would much rather have that than the window unit. So especially if they know that they can save a couple $100 or $100 a month on the power bill.
Now, you know, I would say too, you know, when you go in and you're looking at purchasing homes, I would say best practice, really, if you're not able to go physically walk these properties and get an eye for what's needed, or take a vendor, you know, if you found a vendor and are kind of step one in this process that you trust and take them with you, hey, what's my true cost on the front side of getting this house where it needs to go? Kind of get an idea of what you're purchasing. Or finding somebody that you trust, if you're not able to go physically to the house before you buy it, and get a true assessment about what's going on at this house, what you can kind of expect. Like, you need to understand that's got to be part of your purchase cost. And Spencer mentioned it too. I would add to that, right? Like, maybe it's a 10%, maybe it's 20% more than what they tell you, because there is going to be things, just normal wear and tear on the home, that are going to happen that you're just not expecting outside of maybe the initial investment. So, you know, when you're going in, when you're going to purchase a home, or if you're going to purchase a portfolio of homes, please make sure that you go through, get a good, true assessment of potential issues that may be there. And again, I would say bump that maybe 10, 20%, just kind of give yourself some padding there because things are going to happen.
Yeah. And one word here is obviously we're not, you know, the newer the home you're buying, you're going to have less maintenance, right? So if you're buying a home that was built, you know, 5 years ago, you should have less maintenance. If you are buying a home that has recently been rehabbed, like a turnkey product, then that first 12 months, you're more than likely going to have a lot less issues. But once it starts getting into year two, three, and four, you're going to start seeing things kind of wear down. So just something to remember. All right. So to me, this leads perfectly segues into the third mistake that we see rental property investors making. And this all leads to this last point, which is they don't understand that their tenant or their resident is the real asset. I mean, at the end of the day, your maintenance is there to, yes, you want to protect your property and you want to make sure your house is taken care of. Great. That is an asset, but your most valuable asset is your tenant because they're paying you rent. They're the ones that pay your mortgage if you have a mortgage. They're the ones that make this whole thing possible. You know, if you're benefiting from cash flow, it's because of the resident. So if you are constantly hiring poor contractors, if you are constantly doing the cheapest fixes, and if the maintenance work is constantly bad and keeps breaking, and you keep sending people out to the property, guess what? Your resident, your tenant is not going to stay in that house. They are not going to stay in that property because in their mind, just it's an indication of what they're going to experience for the next several years as the house gets lived in more and more and more. And so what they start doing is they start going, okay, well, I'm going to start looking. I know my lease is up in 3 months, 4 months. I'm going to start looking for a property and maybe even try to get out of this thing early. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So a couple pieces of advice here and things to be looking for. Number one, when you're looking at a tenant or potential new tenants coming on, if you have a new property that you're looking to source a tenant for, one of the most important things that you can do is make sure that your home is ready when the tenant moves in. You want to make sure you've done all the maintenance that's needed. You want to make sure that you've double checked it, put a process in place that you go walk the house and make sure everything's squared away because you want your tenant to have the best move-in experience possible. Utilities are on, everything's working as it should. You want to get off to the right foot with them. If they have issues when they first move into your home, you have lost their trust. It's going to be harder to gain that back. More likely, you're going to probably get more work orders or they're going to submit more issues because, again, they don't trust you because you didn't provide them a good product when they first moved in. And they're going to be looking for a way out day one. So step one, make sure that you have done all your due diligence to make sure the home is move-in ready when the tenant gets there. Spencer talked about making sure that you have vendors or whoever you're sending out there to do the work, they do good quality work, and are also timely and responsive to the tenants. So we want to make sure that we're providing good quality work to the tenants and taking care of it, but we also want to make sure that we are able to communicate. So if you don't have those primary or backup vendors, can't communicate with your tenants, or they're not talking to the tenants, or they're not scheduling with tenants. Again, puts more pressure on the tenants. Tenants are going to leave. They're not going to put up with that. They'll find another house that's going to happen. And all of this really gets to the end goal, right? Which is keeping the tenants in your property, keeping the positive cash flow coming to you so that you're able to pay reap your rewards or gain positive cash flow on your investment. I had conversations with owners of, hey, look, my tenant's moving out every single year. And every single year, I got to go back in and repaint the home, get it ready for a new tenant to move in. And I cannot keep paying these bigger costs on the turns. How do I fix my business to where I'm not having these turn costs, meaning getting it rent ready for the tenant to come in? Very clear. Take care of your tenants while they're there, handle their issues, fix it with a good quality, and you cut out those turn costs that nobody wants. Because in those turn costs, it is a straight cash outlay with no positive cash flow coming in because there's no tenant in there to help cover those costs for you. So all of this is give them a good product when they move in. They sell vendors, getting the product, getting your home ready. Walk it, make sure they're ready to go. Take care of the issues when they come up. Be responsive. Communicate with the tenants. Give them quality repairs. That's going to keep them in there and reduce your turn costs because they're going to stay in your home longer.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what Will's saying. The biggest struggles we have with owners who do their own maintenance is their, you know, inability to respond quickly. And so what happens is that resident or that tenant is reaching back out to us all the time saying, hey, you know, of course we look like the bad person and we're trying to get the owner to respond, but they are constantly going, hey, what's going on? Why hadn't somebody come? Nobody's reached out to me. Or maybe you've told a contractor to get in touch with a tenant and guess what? They didn't do it because maybe they're not so reliable. And so they just leave the tenant hanging and it just becomes, like Will said, a bad issue with a lot of turnover. And turnover is all about spending money for you with nothing coming in. And that's what you want to avoid. You know, I've had tenants that have stayed in properties for 9 and 10 years. And I believe not because I was some fantastic landlord, but because the maintenance response that was set up to, even before I worked here with Evernest, Evernest was managing my property, but I gave Evernest the go ahead. Like, of course they had to contact me when if something had to be done that was real expensive, but otherwise I just said, please take care of it. I want those tenants happy. And they stay. When a tenant stays 9 years, I can promise you that turn doesn't hurt as bad after 9 years. Cause I'm like, hey, doing this once in 9 years is a lot better than doing it, you know, every few years or every 2 years.
And I would say too, and as you go through this, when you're keeping your tenants happy and you have a tenant like Spencer had that's been in there a long time, they're going to let you know when there's issues. And as long as you're taking care of them, they're going to continue to let you know when there are issues, which you can look at and you're like, well, that's bad. I'm spending all this money and I'm having to fix this stuff. Well, think of it in reverse. Spencer's a tenant. You're not taking care of Spencer, the tenant. So Spencer says, well, there's no need in me to report any issues at the home because they're not going to take care of it anyways. Well, what happens? That small leak underneath the sink that he would have reported if you're taking care of those items gets addressed immediately. Reverse that. He doesn't tell you about it. That leak continues. Now you're replacing the entire subfloor, ripping out all the kitchen flooring. The whole pipe's got to go, you know, potential major issues that could have been avoided by just fixing a small washer or something like that, fitting under the sink if the tenant's letting you know. So being responsive, taking care of these small issues when they come up, is going to potentially prevent some bigger issues down the road because the tenants are trusting you that you're going to take care of them. And you're going to go out there and fix it. So it can actually save you money on the long run, kind of going back to the price versus the cost. This is the true price of doing it versus the cost of not doing it turns higher repair bills of things not being addressed appropriately. So,
yeah. And I don't want to act like, I don't want to make it sound like I knew what I was doing all the time. Like literally I've had it on both sides. When I've managed my own property, there are times, especially in the early days when I was a super young investor, I was all about saving money. I was all about the bottom line. No, I got a cash flow. And so I ignored things. I let things, well, that's not that big of a deal. And sometimes even telling the tenant, hey, you know, we'll fix that when we come out and do something else. That's not that big of a deal. And I let small things fester. And before I knew it, like one time I had to spend several thousand dollars fixing soffit and fascia because I wasn't doing routine maintenance like cleaning gutters. I mean, so I've not done it perfectly, but I learned along the way. What we're trying to do is help you not have to go through those painful experiences because in the long run, it does cost you more money. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, to that and the more successful owners that I've seen keeping tenants, I have an owner I used to manage a lot of properties here in Birmingham specifically. His mindset was take care of the tenants, take care of the work orders as quickly and as efficient as possible because he understood he wanted to keep tenants in place. So they called it in. He was going to take care of it. He had his own group of vendors that he worked for. He had a larger portfolio of homes, so he was able to keep them busy. Very timely owner's responses, took care of the tenants' issues. And I will tell you, his tenants stayed in his homes. He was not having a lot of turns. I mean, you still have people moving out, but his business model was get them in my house, keep them in my homes, taking care of them while they're there. And he did a really good job of it. He managed them on his own, highly involved, very communicative to tenants and the vendors. He played that middle person there, but made the decision that he was going to fix their issues when they came up, not let them become or sit there. And he has been very successful keeping tenants at his property with that.
That's awesome, Will. Man, I appreciate it. I think this has been a great episode and hopefully gives investors who are listening a lot to think about. So thank you for being on. And you were a pro, man. You did great.
I appreciate it.
I remember, like, I asked Will to do a video for me. This was a couple of years ago, and you were so nervous on that video. But, man, you are a pro now. Like, it is awesome. So thanks for that. Listen, if you've enjoyed the podcast, share it with some friends. Subscribe if you haven't already subscribed. Leave us a review if you'll do that. And we will see you next week on another episode.